You're listening to Not So Live from Asteroid G, breaking out our knives and getting all stabby. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
Oh, well done on the wordplay. I love it. Your buddy Mike the Ghoul is here. I'm going to channel his inner ghost face and just pretend that this movie existed, I guess, somewhere. We're going to talk about Scream 7, right?
We are. And I'm gonna spoiler what we're saying right now. We're actually going to get into real spoilers in a bit. But I'm going to spoiler what my opinion of it right now. And I feel like this is the weakest the franchise has ever been.
This movie was, I mean, I don't want to like steal a quote from another YouTuber, but like, you know, Jeremy Johns has does film reviews. This guy, really great stuff. Shout out. If he has a movie that's bad, it's just, he says it's absolute dog shit. This movie, you can't find a better way to describe it than this was absolute dog shit to me. They tried so hard, I think, at times to just give us what the fans wanted, and I didn't want any of this.
Man. I don't want any of this. No, and it's funny because I watched it on Sunday, and then you immediately watched it right after I did. And the first comment you sent back to me was, and I think it's very telling, this wasn't a Scream movie, this was a Stab movie. And that's interesting because I started watching, I've been avoiding as many spoilers as I could ahead of time because it's Scream. You want to go in not knowing who the killers are. That's the point of these. So I didn't watch any of the reviews of this movie until after I'd seen it. And I was watching Amanda the Jedi, and that was the very first thing that she said, too, was, this wasn't a Scream movie, this was a Stab movie. So we're right on track with that.
Yeah.
These movies have lost the plot.
It's so weird, because, like, you know, like the build-up in this trilogy is what made me feel the disappointment I think I felt with this one. And I, you know, we talked Star Wars on this show before, too, and, like, that, like, the hope and excitement I felt after, you know, Scream 5, like, you know, getting really back to its roots, and yes, the nostalgia was there, but like, damn, it felt good. 6 was, I mean, okay, it's a little bit different. It's, again, you know, it's their college one where they go away, same formula as 2, okay. And then 3, like, they tried to really hit home that, like, you know, third trilogy thing, and you can't do that with this one when 2 of your fucking stars aren't even in the movie.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. I don't hate 6. I actually kind of like 6 for what it is.
It's not bad.
5 is a reboot, remake-quil, whatever you want to call it. It's the passing of a torch to a new generation, and it's not even someone related to Sydney, which I actually really liked. It had a different connection. And then number 6 wasn't just a let's-go-do college kind of sequel. It was also a movie analyzing the whole of the franchise. Like, you know, number 3 analyzed the idea of trilogies. This analyzed the idea of a franchise film, which is what Scream does. It always comments on itself. Those two movies started this thing so that you could then get the 7th movie that was not only a capper of a trilogy that I'm assuming would have had Sam's character become one of the Ghostface killers or more lean towards it than she ever has before, but also that it would, like, bring everything to a close and maybe then do a new generational shift again. I got the vibe they wanted to try and do the generational shift by introducing Sydney's daughter Tatum here, but it doesn't work when A, we know nothing about her, and B, she sucks.
Where, and like, what gets me to, where is the mention of this, like, almost fully grown adult daughter at any point of us seeing Sydney in any of the last movies? Like, too, like,
I think,
did they mention it? Like, I was really trying to remember if they did. Like, I know she has a family.
Yeah,
like,
they mention a family in 5 and her husband Mark, and they mention in 6 that she stayed home where she lived with the kids and with Mark. That's it. They did mention that there were kids, which is why we see not only a teenage daughter but a very brief web call awkwardly with 2 other kids that have no consequence to the plot. That's so dumb.
Right.
But it's also like, someone did the math, and if she were to have had Tatum when the timeline of the series lays out, Tatum would have been 2 during Scream 4 when she's not mentioned at all.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's a bit of a retcon, and this is from a franchise that's been pretty good about not doing retcons.
They've been very good about that. Yeah. Like, they have little slip-ups here and there, but they always kind of, like, you know,
nothing
make
like
it
this
where you can't dig deep. Like, wait a minute here.
No.
Like, because, like, what mom is going out on a book tour, you know, when she has a 2-year-old at home? Like, it ain't happening.
Or leaving the 2-year-old at home. Like, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, maybe there's a thing, like you said, like, for the safety factor, but then why are you doing this in the first place? Like,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
There's a lot of just weirdness going on here. But, like, to your point, like, we're going on, we're passing the torch on to the daughter, and we're kind of seeing the formula play out again with how Scream began with this new group of kids, kind of.
Yep. So we're going to get into the plot in just a second, but before we do, we want to first thank our sponsors for this week, Oscorp. Humanity has come a long way during its time on Earth. From the discovery of fire to the development of the wheel, movable type, internal combustion engine, and splitting the atom. At each step, visionaries have helped push our species forward, and it's time for a visionary to step forward again. Norman Osborn is that man, and Oscorp is the company to do it. From electronics to pharmaceuticals, biotech applications to military programs, Oscorp has been there. We're the first, best, and brightest around, and we're here for you. Oscorp Industries, we're there first. The plot of this movie is ridiculously simple to summarize if we don't get into spoilers. It has been a certain number of years since Sydney last had to deal with killers, and a killer has come to her new hometown somewhere in Indiana, I think is where it is. I thought they were in California because it looked like a Californian small town, but apparently
it's
set in Indiana and you just couldn't tell. I don't even know if they mentioned it, but supposedly Indiana. Sure, okay, Hollywood, whatever. She's having problems with her daughter, Tatum, named after her best friend from high school, Tatum, who apparently has been sheltered from this whole part of her life because Sydney does not want her daughter to deal with the violence and the fear that she's dealt with. So she hasn't told Tatum anything at all, or trained Tatum, or had her learn martial arts, or learn how to use a gun, or anything. We'll get to this later. But Tatum has a boyfriend, who apparently is not too dissimilar from Billy Loomis, and suddenly killings start happening. Is it the boyfriend? Is it the neighbor? Is it some of the kids in high school? Is it the neighbor's son? Or is it someone else that we don't even know yet? And among all of this, Sydney is now starting to get calls from Stu Mocker.
Right.
One of the two killers from the very first movie, once again played by Matthew Lillard. And we have to wonder, did somehow Stu survive having a 90-pound CRT TV dropped on his head? Has he been alive all along, or is this an AI deepfake of Stu meant to scare Sydney and get her out of her zone? Only time will tell. So
it's so funny, right? Like, the technology we're in now, we've gone from voice modulators over a cell phone to deep faking through a video call now. Yeah. Like, Scream is not quite jumped the shark.
No, it kind of jumped the shark. It kind of jumped the shark.
Pretty close.
Oh, yeah. And also, spoilers. Now we're getting into spoiler territory.
Yes.
The whole idea that Stu somehow survived his injuries, I didn't buy that from minute one. I'm like, I watched this dude get electrocuted and have a giant fucking TV thrown on his head. And, like, these TVs, I know TVs we have now are light and simple and, like, they won't kill anyone, but if you've ever seen a 40-inch TV out in the wild from the CRT era, that thing would crunch walnuts. Your head is getting smashed in.
Yeah, I'm a pretty, like, big guy and pretty, you know, and we used to have, like, a 36-inch, like, Sony flat panel TV before they were like flat screens, and this thing was a fucking behemoth that I could barely lift by myself.
It's like the kind of guys that can pick up their wife and carry them over the doorstep when they get married can't carry a CRT TV of this size. So
seriously.
So whether or not the movie wants us to believe that, I didn't buy for a second that it was Stu. The idea that it's a Stu Mocker deepfake is silly enough on its own, but then the movie does a piss poor job of ever giving us any killers that I could think are the ones besides the one I eventually settled on, which I guessed within the first act and I was right.
It was the whole point of these movies is like it could be anybody. And they just took that to a level where they didn't give you any concrete of suspicion with anybody either, almost. Like, it was like I didn't understand. Like, who's doing, like, maybe that is why they really were trying to play it off, like, okay, this is Stu, because no one here has an attachment. But, like, as ambiguous as they left it from the first one, to your point, like, there's no way he survives that. And where has he been all this time? And, like, you're taking Sydney, who's gone through so much other shit, with a daughter who doesn't know? Like, And a boyfriend who's running the fucking the course, like you said, is basically a Billy Loomis clone and so on and repeat. It loses me, like, 40 minutes in here. I'm like, this is not going to end well.
And, like, the first 20, 30 minutes, I'm actually kind of okay with. I thought the movie was okay. Everything was fine. It's around the point where the first of the ghost faces show up and then immediately gets killed. And you know, because we're only a half an hour into this movie, that we're not done. And there's probably at least two other killers going on. Because Scream 6 gave us three, so now we're allowed to have three. assuming it's two ghost faces, which I did because that's how it always works in these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. You know there's going to be at least two. When you have Anna Camp, who's a decent enough star, and you have Ethan Embry, who was a star back in the day and shows up in the most random role here to, like, basically act as exposition guy and point our heroines in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. I knew from the from minute one, Anna Camp and Ethan Embry were going to be our killers. And I was right. Like, there was a part of me in the back of my mind that was sitting there going, well, maybe it's Tatum. Because she keeps, like, almost getting killed and then not. And I'm like, but we already did that plot line in Scream 4 with the cousin. And, and it was the most intriguing plot line I could do, but it still felt kind of rote. And that was also written by Kevin Williamson. So I'm like, he wouldn't do that again, would he? He didn't.
Or would he?
He just gave us something even dumber. So
right.
So, yeah, no, I just... I struggled with this one so much just because there's nothing to latch on to here.
It really, there, you don't like when your main cast, like, aside from some of these legacy characters, again, you don't have any attachment to.
No,
like, I'm supposed to give a shit about, you know, Sydney's daughter and her friends that, like, okay, like, I feel bad for Sydney still. Like, I don't care about the rest of this movie.
No, and that's my problem. Like, we're supposed to care about Tatum, who acts like a pissy bitch from minute one and gets no character development otherwise, which is a bad way to introduce your character. And it's only her friends that are getting killed off, not Sydney's friends, not anyone else. Everyone who actually matters in these long-running movies has plot armor. Like, the as we've pointed out a couple times now, the Meeks twins show up again, and goddamn, is their plot armor the strongest of anyone? Because
they are thick, man.
They take the most. They've taken more damage than Sydney has, and they somehow keep surviving.
They are. They basically, like, they took Dewey from us a couple movies ago, and they've given us these two kids that, like, is let's throw everything we threw at Dewey at these two and just keep them going. Right. Like, it's crazy.
Right. Yeah, but so we don't have anyone in Tatum's circle that we actually care about because they're pointless, basic characters. The original Scream made sure to develop every one of its characters to be someone interesting. They weren't cookie cutters because Scream wasn't about cookie cutter people. It wanted to be play against the tropes, which, when you consider that Scream came out in 1996 and we were just at the end of the Friday the 13th era, like, it makes sense. The characters in Friday the 13th had all become basic stereotypes. Scream was playing against type. Now Scream is writing characters that are nothing but stereotypes. You have, like, the creepy boyfriend, the weird podcasting kid, the creepy girl who works at a bar, and... like, every single one of these guys can get distilled down into one talking point, and they have no personality beyond that.
Right.
So, you don't care when they die, and they all die. All of them.
Some of the kills are pretty good, but,
they
like, to your point, like, the brilliance, like, I'll never forget the first time that I watched the first Scream. And, like, you know, you can say what you want about, you know, the original being better than everything. It obviously always is. But, like, they're still, like... the formula that worked for that is, like, you really didn't know who it was. The entire, like, I thought for a minute it could have been the principal before he died at times. Like, the suspicion was on everybody, and you didn't know who you could trust. Like, even at times, like, can you trust Tatum in that movie? Like, you know, you weren't sure about anything. And in this movie, I just didn't give a shit. I was waiting for the next person to die and show it more gory. Like, it was stupid.
And they were gory kills. The two kills at the very start of the movie were very interesting. In fact, I think the opening of the movie is probably where it's at its strongest, because two 20-somethings that show up and rent out the Mocker House because it's now been turned into museum/Airbnb, and it's the murder house people love to go in. I could see people actually doing that. That feels realistic. And
it
then
does.
Ghostface shows up, kills both of them, and then burns the house down as if to make a statement of, we're going to burn the franchise down and rebuild. Which is a bold statement for the opening of the movie to make, especially when it then doesn't do that at all.
That had me feeling so good, right? Like, the title cuts along each of these three movies, though, have all been very, very good. Like, some of the strongest points of this, like, ending trilogy here has been the title cuts and the kills in the beginning. The fake out of Jenna Ortega's death in the first one, all the way to the fake out of the killers in the second one, to, like, you know, this one bringing it back home, like, I'm burning down Stu's house. Like, and we had heard rumors, maybe, I know I had, I don't know if you had heard about this point, but that Matthew Lillard was rumored to be in the movie somehow, and, like, they go to his house, and I'm like, I'm feeling it, like, after that, and then it just dies.
Kid does die.
Dies.
Yeah, the second we cut away from those kids who just died, and we go to Sydney, and we get her boring life with all of its boring details, and we're supposed to think that Stu is alive, which I never did. I'm just like, I don't care about this at all. I didn't care about Sydney and her problems with her kid because it's poorly developed and makes, and as we pointed out at the start of this, didn't make any sense that she wouldn't tell her kid anything about anything at all. I get PTSD trauma, but if you have this over the fact that killers have shown up at five different points in your life and you've somehow narrowly survived each time, maybe you'd tell your family a little something so that they'd be protected.
I mean, I also would think, right, like at some points, I mean, we live in such a digital age with everything at the tip of your fingertips. Someone's Googling her mom at fucking some point too, right?
Like, well, yeah, and that's the thing.
It's impossible to not know who she is.
Sydney says that there are books and movies and other things, so Tatum could have just gone and watched any of that, but like, but you're there. You have a fucking panic room in your house that she doesn't even know about, which is entirely stupid. You're not running panic room drills with all your kids in case a killer shows up?
Yeah.
Really?
What kind of a mother are you at this point, Sid? Right? Like, it felt very much like Mark Hamill in Star Wars. Like, you're taking my Luke Skywalker, and you're really not doing the direction I would go with it. But I'm a professional, so I'm gonna stick through it. And, like, it felt like Neve Campbell really didn't exactly agree with, like, some of the decisions Sydney would have made in this movie, but she tried, to be her best in this movie.
I think it's even worse in this case, because, yeah, Mark Hamill didn't agree with the direction Luke took, but that was from a writer who was trying to reinvent the franchise and do something different. This movie was written by Kevin Williamson, who wrote the first one, so if anyone should understand her character, it's this motherfucker.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, that's what gets me too. Like, it all boils down to that. Like, you know, you're so right. Like, you knew. You were there from the fucking beginning.
Yeah.
How are you gonna fuck this up?
And it's this thing now, we have, what, six legacy characters now? We have Sydney with Gale, we have the Meeks twins, now we have Tatum, and we have Mark. And if all of these characters show up in the next movie, I'm assuming every single one of these assholes survives. Because we have two large group of characters with plot armor. We know Gale's always going to survive, and we know Sydney's always going to survive. Because at this point, if they were going to kill Sydney off, they would have done it here. Or they just never would have brought her back because they had Sam and Tara, which they fucked up. So, like, at this point, it feels like we have too large a cast of characters that we care too much about that we just can't get rid of. Like, I don't know if you watched it, but I watched the Stranger Things finale, like, all of it, which I hated. And there's a group of, like, 30 characters in that show, and the show can't kill any of them because it loves all of them too much. We're getting to that point with these movies.
It feels that way, right? Like, she used to be, like, the final girl, right? Yeah. Like, that was Sid. She was the final girl.
Yeah.
It's the final group now.
It is.
It's what it is.
Yeah.
I think, to your point, in the next movie, either A, they do all survive, or B, they all die. Because you can't go any other way now with this. Like, you can't kill the brother and the sister and have it have the same effect. Like, when you killed Dewey, like, that hurt, man.
And that,
like,
that anyone could die. But no one could die again. We're back to that point. Yeah. And it's even a bigger cast, because at least at that point it was only Sydney, Dewey, and Gale. Now it's six people. We have this fucking cast. Oh my god.
You know, if Randy wasn't safe in the first trilogy, like, how are you making these people safe,
right,
man? Like, you took my Jamie Kennedy from me. How are you gonna do this?
He was my favorite character too. So
He was fun. He was fun.
That does lead me to the next thought, though, of where does the series possibly go from here? Do you keep bringing Sydney back, even though her story is so beyond done? She has no character growth anymore. There's nowhere for her to go. If we focus on Tatum, that'd be great, except for the fact that Tatum got no development and really sucks.
Yeah.
So
I'm not sure where we go from here. Like, they've written themselves into quite the pickle, because, like, you've already expended your shot of the Billy Loomis bloodline, because you can't do that anymore. You've now blown your load with Stu. You can't do that again. You got characters who've been around forever we are too attached to now to kill, and even the new characters. I don't know where this goes from here. It's just all very confusing.
I feel like, and this is the last note I have on this, I feel like if we're gonna do another one from here, we need to let Sydney and Tatum sit this out. Like, Scream 8 should not have either of them in there. Shouldn't have Mark, shouldn't have Gale, shouldn't have any of them. I know everyone loves their legacy characters, but I think Scream 6 did the right thing of trying to get rid of some of them. Sure, it was because they didn't want to pay Neve to actually come back, but I think in a way that was actually a blessing, because we could finally just focus on new characters. I think we need to go for a new focus. And I'm not saying get rid of everyone, but I think we have a perfectly good final girl who's actually survived a couple films, isn't tied to anyone, and is clearly allowed to come back. I think the movies need to focus on Mindy.
That's a good point. Like, I think she's strong, and I can buy her. I can buy her being a final girl. I could.
It's like if everyone except Randy died, and then Randy gets to go carry on the franchise. It's a different take, and at least it's a different perspective from Sam and from Sydney. And since she's already survived so many times anyway, we already know she has plot armor. At least just focus on her and her brother. Maybe her brother could die at some point for once.
I think that, like, maybe that's where they could go. Like, you know, here we go again, like, you know, spitballing and brainstorming, like, what could be a good movie, and we're writing it without them, because, like, she could be. And, like, you know, the thing, her brother could die at the beginning of the movie, and she's got to, like, figure out what's going on, you know, who did it, and then maybe Gail shows up, and, you know, Gail's got, like, a, you know, but she's the only one that comes back, but there's no Sydney, and maybe, like, you put the suspicion on Gail, like, she's finally snapped because she's upset that she's not the face anymore of the way that's changed to this new generation. But I don't know, even that feels like it could get kind of weird. But I think the Mindy as the final girl makes a lot of sense to me,
any of the new characters that are allowed to bring back, because I don't think even unless they threw so much money at it that it would be so expensive to bring her back, I don't think they're getting Melissa Barrera and Jenna Ortega to come back at this point. I just, I think they're gone and that bridge is burned, even if Spyglass were interested in bringing them back. I think, if it's not going to be Sydney, and it shouldn't be Tatum because Tatum sucks. I'm sorry, I'm not backing off from that. It needs to be Mindy. Mindy's the one character we have that we like who could carry the franchise for a while.
It could be, you know, because Gail, you know, Courtney Cox, she's too old to be that final girl. Sydney, her story's done. Please?
Beyond done.
And yeah, the daughter I don't like. Like, unless you're going to reboot this and, like, you know, do just a whole new something, like, you know, Randy's cousin or something, and we're going to get rid of the cast entirely, the only new person that would make sense would be Mindy, because you can't bring back those other two, because you missed your chance here to finish that story.
You said Randy's cousin, and all I could help but think were those terrible American Pie spinoffs where it's like the different Stiflers are the ones in the lead. Oh my god! I'm like, I can't wait for Scream Presents Beta House. You know?
Yeah, right. Oh my god. Oh man. like instead of like PCU, like the OA University DOA, or something like that. Yeah,
that's
like
good.
Oh my
that's
god.
Good. That's good. No. So, this movie severely unimpressed me to a point I didn't think a Scream movie could. And instead of being excited for where this franchise could go at this point, even though this movie made a ton of money and clearly will get sequels, I'm actually to a point now where, like, if the next one gets a bad review, I'm out again until it comes out on home video. Like, I don't feel the need to see this one when it premieres. It's just Scream 8 has no interest to me right now.
This is far and away, I think, the weakest installment of this franchise. And, like, you know, for a while it was maybe 2 or 3, you know. I know you don't like 4, but 4, I really like 4.
A lot of people like 4. I'm not going to begrudge that. That's fine.
Yeah. There's just something about 4 that does it for me, and maybe it's the cast in that movie.
I like 3, and most people hate that one, but I thought the plot of that one was at least interesting.
That was much better upon, like, rewatches while we've been watching these again to me. Like, I thought that was the shitty one of the first trilogy. I lean more toward the second one being the worst of the movies of the first three now.
The second one, it just tries too much to be the first one again, while the third one actually at least has a voice to it. Might not be very good, but it has a voice.
It's different. The, you know, the kills are fun. The whole Hollywood aspect, they lean into the stab thing of that. This, like we said in the very beginning, like the point that I told you, like this felt like I was watching a stab movie instead of a Scream movie. I didn't like it. I'm disappointed. I felt betrayed after the first 15 minutes of where this could have gone to where it ended up. And I mean, I'll probably wait till the next movie comes out on DVD or, you know, some kind of digital streaming service as well. Like, I don't see myself giving the money here, and that feels sad because Scream was one of those franchises we've talked about, like Alien, even like, well, you know, you'll probably get my money every time, and even Marvel to a degree, you'll probably get my money every time. I don't know if you're gonna get my money next time with these guys.
No,
I don't know.
They used to be the pinnacle of slasher right now. Like, they could like, not all of them were good, but they at least tried. But this one definitely feels like it's not even trying anymore, and it's just hard to care.
It has to be because they had to basically rewrite a whole story from scratch because their trilogy was you know, shit on.
Yeah.
You know, when they got rid of their two lead actresses. So that's like the whatever own
fault. I have no sympathy. You can't. Zero. You fired your actresses and then you still rushed this into production anyway. Yeah. Maybe you should have taken the hint and waited a couple years.
You really should have thought this one through, yep. I think, a little bit more. You were trying to play off of, like, you know, the success of the last two movies and kind of just keep that momentum going. Yep. And boy, did you fucking hit a concrete wall here. or do hard. I say, maybe we dropped a garage door on their head. Like, I'm not really sure what you want to do.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it was so bad.
Oh, well. I guess we'll see again at some point, and who knows what they're going to do with this, but it's going to have to be something real interesting to get my attention again.
Yeah, we'll see, but yep. I mean, eh.
Yeah. So, this has been Not So Live from Asteroid G, doing a very horrifying Naked Mile. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
Hey, your buddy Mike the Ghoul is wondering, what's your favorite scary movie? Because it's now this one. This movie was terribly scary.
Oh, God. I'd rather watch a Stab. That's the truth of the matter.
Yeah, I'd rather watch Stab 7 at this point.
Sure, we'll be back. Yeah, right. We will see you all next time.